content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Anna Dean Silver from the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Out in the Garden. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the book The First Time Gardener, Growing Vegetables, and that's by Jessica Sowards. And we left off last time at the beginning of chapter 4, and we are the topic of this chapter is growing with the seasons. And we will start with that, and she has a small intro here. When we moved to our farm and made the decision to start gardening on a much larger scale, my husband's Nana gifted me a huge collection of heirloom seeds. She shared stories of her childhood on a farm in Newfoundland and expressed her profound joy that we were interested in gardening. Both the seeds and the stories were like gasoline on the fire of my desire to grow our own food. It was just getting cold when she gave them to us. By late winter, I simply could not wait any longer. We were still experiencing icy nights and frost-kissed mornings, but my eagerness to plant my new seeds drove me to research. I read everything I could to learn which plants could survive the frost, assembled a shoddy raised bed made of cinder blocks, filled in with yard clippings and compost, and then planted my first late winter garden. By spring, when the gardening products started to pop up in all the stores, and I noticed the neighbors tilling and preparing their garden plots, I already had rows of peas climbing a makeshift trellis, radishes crying out to be picked, and happy bunches of kale stretching their arms to the sun. If new gardeners were to plan their gardens based on what is available in local big box stores, they might believe that spring is the only time of year to plant a garden. Gardening is heavily marketed to consumers during spring months. Then fall rolls around, and it can be difficult to find a bag of potting soil for sale anywhere. I want to debunk the idea that the garden is an activity exclusive to spring and summer. Some plants actually thrive in cooler weather. Depending on your climate, you may be able to grow food year-round. And the next topic is frost-tender and frost-hardy plants. Remember, this book, she is in upper north New York, and we're in the warmer zone, so we have to take that into consideration. Plants don't read weather reports or gardening books. They do not know the calendar date. Somewhere in their anatomy, though, they are triggered to grow by certain temperatures and urged along in growing by how long the sun is in the sky each day. Just the same, somewhere in their anatomy lies their determined threshold of what temperatures they can withstand. Cold temperatures kill plants by destroying their cell walls. Have you ever put a canned drink or a glass bottle in your freezer to cool it off, only to forget about it? If so, you probably also have a memory of cleaning up a big mess in your freezer. When the contents of a container can expand and contract with temperature fluctuations, but the container holding them cannot do the same, you can say goodbye to that container. And Turn the page. When tender plants are exposed to freezing temperatures, the cell walls cannot adjust properly, and as they thaw, they explode, leaving you with a blackened, mushy mess in place of your beloved garden plants. This is an inevitable happening of every gardening season, unless of course you live in a frost-free zone. At some point in the fall, sooner if you are in a cooler climate and much later in warmer areas, you will have what is called your first frost. This is the very first day in your growing season for your temperature to dip below 32 degrees Fahrenheit, 0 degrees centigrade. This is also sometimes called the killing frost, because a single freezing night will kill frost-tender plants. And then she lists some frost-tender plants. These plants, also sometimes referred to as tender plants or warm weather varieties, are commonly associated with the summer garden. These are either started from seed indoors and transplanted into the garden after all threat of frost has passed, or direct sown, planted directly in place in the garden after nighttime temperatures are over 50 degrees Fahrenheit or 10 degrees Celsius. These plants will be killed or very badly damaged by even a brief exposure to freezing temperatures. Beans, bush, pole, and runner, corn, cucumbers, eggplants, gourds, melons, which are cantaloupe, honeydew, and muskmelon types, okra, peppers, southern peas, which are cow peas or black-eyed peas, squash, pumpkins, sweet potatoes, tomatillas, tomatoes, and watermelon. And those are frost tender, so cannot be planted until after our direct frost day. Winter squash and summer squash. The cucurbita family is large. Under the umbrella of this plant classification are all squash, the hard-skinned butternuts, acorns, and pumpkins we've come to associate with fall, and the soft-skinned yellow crooknecks and green zucchinis we have come to expect at our summer barbecues. Contrary to their names, summer and winter squash are both grown in the summer garden. They are all very frost-tender plants that must be sown after the danger of frost has passed and must be harvested before the cold weather returns in the fall. Winter squash gets its name from its excellent capacity to be stored once it's been properly cured. Winter squash can last months in storage and is a staple of the winter diet of those who grow them. These varieties are left on the plant until the fruits are fully mature with hard skins that cannot be easily pierced with a fingernail. This often takes over 100 days from sowing to harvesting. Summer squash are varieties that are harvested very young and small and are consumed right away. Their very thin, immature skin causes them to rot quickly off the vine. Summer squash usually only take around 50 days in ideal conditions to produce fruit at the harvestable stage. These varieties, though the fruit are best harvested young, can be left to mature and will grow very large with hardened skins. Some varieties of squash are versatile and can be harvested young for summer squash or can be left to mature and harvested as winter squash. Great heirloom squash varieties for summer harvesting are Black Beauty Zucchini, Early Prolific Yellow Crookneck, Golden Marbre Patty Pan, Panache Jean Aver, and Ronde Denise. And great heirloom squash varieties for winter storage are Cherokee Tan, Delicata, Kabocha, New England Pie Pumpkin, and Sweet Meat. And those are the names that you would see on the packages of seeds if you buy them, or the plant when you buy it too. Those would be their names. And versatile varieties that can be harvested young as summer squash or mature for storage is Camo Camo and Tromboncino Zucchini Rampicante. And our next topic is frost-hardy plants. I can't tell you how many times I've talked to dejected new gardeners who are lamenting their failed efforts to grow radishes and carrots in the heat of summer. Woe is me, they will cry. The black thumb, I can't even grow a radish. Your failed summer radishes have nothing to do with your thumb and everything to do with the genetic makeup of the radish. Just like you cannot coax a tomato to live through a frozen winter night, you cannot make cool weather crops thrive in extreme heat. Plants that can survive in temperatures below freezing are called either hardy or half-hardy, semi-hardy. Half-hardy or semi-hardy plants can tolerate a mild freeze, but begin to struggle when the temperature goes below 28 degrees Fahrenheit or minus 2 degrees centigrade. Hardy varieties can survive much colder temperatures. Both kinds of plants, when offered mild protection from the elements, can tolerate colder temperatures than they would be able to if they were exposed to wind and precipitation. On the flip side, these hardy varieties don't usually do well in very warm growing climates. Unlike the fruiting plants, we happily harvest during hot summers. Cold weather crops are vegetables of which we harvest the leaves, stems, or roots. When the weather becomes steadily warmer, consistently over 85 degrees Fahrenheit or 29 degrees centigrade, this triggers these plants to mature into the later stages of their life cycle, producing flowers and seeds. If you live in a cool climate, you may be able to successfully grow these crops through the summer. If you live in a warm area, you would do better to grow them in the fall or early spring. Note, acclimation is everything. You know that first brisk fall morning when you step outside and feel the bite of cold in the air? It's the first morning that sends you back into the house for a sweater and a cap. Now, think of the first warmish day of spring, when you pause to breathe the fresh air and turn your face up to the sun. Isn't it funny how the same temperature day that feels cool in fall can feel warm in spring. This is because when you're acclimated to a hot summer, a moderately cool day feels cold. When you've grown used to the cold winter, any somewhat warm, sunny day feels comfortably warm. Plants are living things that acclimate to their surroundings as well. A frost-hardy plant that has grown through the garden in the fall, tolerating cool nights and windy days, will be far more prepared to survive a freeze than the exact same variety that was grown in a greenhouse and transplanted just before the freeze. When attempting to grow frost-hardy plants, it's important to give them time to acclimate to cool nights before expecting them to withstand more extreme temperatures. Semi-hardy plants. Semi-hardy plants tolerate light frosts between 28 degrees Fahrenheit or minus 2 degrees centigrade and 32 degrees Fahrenheit or 0 degrees centigrade. They can withstand colder temperatures with frost fabric cover and acclimation. And here's a list of these semi-hardy plants. Beets, bok choy, carrots, cauliflower, celery, endive, English peas, lettuce, pak choy, potatoes, strawberries, and Swiss chard. Now, hardy plants. Hardy plants tolerate temperatures lower than 28 degrees Fahrenheit or minus 2 degrees centigrade. They can withstand colder temperatures with frost fabric cover and acclimation. And here's a list of the hardy plants. Arugula, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, cilantro, collards, dill, garlic, kale, kohlrabi, leeks, mache, which is corn salad, mustards, onions, parsley, radishes, rosemary, rutabaga, spinach, thyme, and turnips. And those are the hardy plants. And our next topic is perennials. The term perennial literally means through the years. Perennial garden plants are plants that live longer than two seasons. They may be hardy enough to withstand the winter, or their tops may die back and grow again the following year from dormant tubers or bulbs. Either way, if a plant can live for more than 2 years in your garden, it is called a perennial. The average low temperature in your area will determine which plants are called perennials. In very warm growing climates, pepper plants grow taller than men and produce year after year. They are perennials. In any garden that sees a winter freeze, however, peppers have to be planted year after year because they die every winter. In my garden, peppers are annuals. Most of the plants commonly planted in vegetable gardens are treated as annual plants. They are started, grown, harvested, and removed within one growing year. There are some perennial plants that deserve a place in the food garden, though. Establishing a place for these in your first garden is a worthy investment. since they keep coming back year after year, the sooner you get them planted, the sooner and longer you'll be harvesting from them. Plant perennials in an area where they will be able to stay for years. A good established bed of perennials can come back for decades. So putting these in the center of your vegetable garden may not be the best idea. Give them their own space. Every fall, as the plants brown and dry, cut them down and cover the ground with 3 inches of mulch. Asparagus. Asparagus is usually planted as crowns, bare roots that can be purchased from garden supply stores or online plant retailers. Prepare your asparagus bed in the early spring as soon as the ground is thawed. Remove debris from the soil, amend with organic matter, plant with crowns, and mulch lightly. Now prepare for one of the greatest lessons in patience you will ever learn as a gardener. Asparagus plants need 3 years to become established before they are harvested. Wait. Don't stop reading. Don't move on to the more immediate rewarding plants. If you want to grow asparagus, just plant it now. It may not feel worth it to try to grow a crop that takes 3 years to harvest, but there's never a better time than now to do it. After your asparagus bed is established, it will reward you each spring with a harvest of the most delicious asparagus spears you can imagine. The beauty is, you'll never have to plant asparagus in your garden again. Your patience will be repaid with a crop every year from your perennial plants. And rhubarb. Plant rhubarb from crowns in early spring as soon as the ground thaws. Space crowns 4 feet apart. Make sure the soil has plenty of compost, aged manure, or other organic matter, as rhubarb plants are heavy feeders. Mulch well. Do not harvest rhubarb stalks the first year. And here the next topic is growing zones. Different countries use different charts to determine growing zones. I view it like this. Some regions use Celsius to communicate the temperature, and some use Fahrenheit. But water freezes at the same point in both regions, no matter what you call it. Growing zones are used to simply communicate whether certain plants will survive the winter where you're gardening. Growing zones are determined by the average low temperature in a region. Someone could be in the exact same zone as me, but have a completely different gardening experience. Just because we have the same zone doesn't mean you will follow the same schedule or face the same challenges. It only means we have the same average low temperatures. If you're trying to determine your zone, or you live in an area that doesn't even classify regions by a growing zone chart, do not despair. Research weather reports to find the average low temperature in your area. This will help you determine whether your area stays warm enough to support a plant you may want to grow through the winter. And here in North Carolina, we are zone 8, 7, and 8. And I'll bring that into consideration when we go through the zones to grow in. I'm sorry. When will this plant thrive? Search online for a monthly record of average high-low temperatures for your region. Print this out and put it in your garden planning notebook. When you read about the thresholds of different plants, consult the average temperatures for your area. Consider the brassicas, which can tolerate a hard freeze, but struggle when daytime highs exceed 85 degrees Fahrenheit or 29 degrees Celsius. What months in your garden will be the ideal temperatures for those plants to thrive? Now consider peppers. Their growth can become stunted when exposed to nighttime temperatures lower than 55 degrees Fahrenheit or 13 degrees centigrade, but have no issue with very hot days. During which months in your garden will they thrive? You see, the question we need to ask when considering our garden plans is not what month do I plant these or when do I start these seeds. We need to pinpoint the best time for those plants to thrive in our garden and then work backward from that point. Determining your season. When gardeners refer to their growing season, they are referencing the period of time during the year between the last frost in spring and the first frost in fall. The last frost date and first frost date are the cornerstones for all your garden planning and planting. They are, of course, estimates, since we can't very well call months into the future and ask the exact date that the temperature will drop below freezing. We must rely on public weather records from years past. Right here at the onset of garden planning, do an internet search for the last frost date in your area. You may need to search by your city's name or nearby large city. Write the estimates down. Now search for the estimate's first frost date in your area and record your findings. And I will do that for this program, and we'll come back with the estimates in the next podcast. We've run out of time for today's episode of Out in the Garden. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Anna Dean Silver, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Out in the Garden is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. And we hope you join us again next time.